Here we are in the Nexus.
Bing bong. Welcome to the Nexus. I think we should make Spicks and Specks our opening theme song by the Bee Gees.
I agree. So you listen to it.
I did. I did my homework. We're gonna save that for later.
Okay. Okay.
Tonight, this is what's on tap for tonight. We have the NFL playoffs. And then we're gonna get into the mystery topics that I have for you, which I'm giving you no advanced warning about.
Which is fantastic. I can't wait. I mean, I don't really even know what to say.
And then a shout out to our listener, Elaine in New Jersey, that we found out is listening to our podcast.
Oh, hey, Elaine. How you doing? Is Elaine your mom?
That is correct. Which also means that we are on two coasts. We are listened to on the Gulf Coast and the Atlantic.
There you go. And I mean, I feel that with our presence in the Minnesota, Wisconsin area, that we could also say the coast of the Great Lakes.
Our demographics do say we have a listener in Germany and in like Ireland or the United Kingdom. So if you happen to be one of those people, please reach out to us. Let us know who you are. We'd love to hear from you.
This is an international podcast, ladies and gentlemen. We
I think
are
it's galactic is the word.
Oh, yes. I mean, so if on the times when we're not using Spicks and Specks as our theme song, we could also use is it Intergalactic by the Beastie Boys?
You know, I'm not well versed in the Beastie Boys, so.
That's a shame. You really should be. I feel like that's something you should open your mind to.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of them, but that's a topic for another day.
Well, I think that maybe we just end this thing right now.
So let's get into these were our predictions for – we both predicted Buffalo to beat Kansas City, Green Bay to beat San Francisco, Houston to beat Baltimore, and Detroit to beat Tampa Bay. So how did we do, Scott?
We were 1-for-4, which is exceptional.
1-3.
Yeah, yeah. We were one for four, so – you know, in we would have just a below, just a slightly subpar batting average if it were baseball. I mean, you know, a 250 average.
That's true.
That'll keep you on a major league team.
It will. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's no shame in what we pulled off on this past weekend with our predictions.
As George Costanza would say, it's right there in the meaty part of the bell curve.
He would say that. He would say that. And I mean, is our producer working on like standard deviations and things like that so that we can know our statistical
means modes?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Medians.
Pythagorean theorem.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're going to say some things. P scores, Z scores, T scores, all of those. We're going to put that on the Y axis and we're just going to let it ride.
Gotta stay away from the X axis.
Yeah.
So let's go. Let's talk about these games just a little bit and then talk about our predictions for next week. As you pointed out, I was very wrong on my support of the Eagles, who really blew it. So let's start the Houston Baltimore game. We did pick Houston. I'm not surprised that Baltimore won. Did you walk away from this game impressed with Baltimore? Personally, I did not, but.
No, I really didn't. I was excited in the first half because it looked like there was game, and then of course you know Baltimore came out in the second half and just kind of put it away. I'm not, you know, and you know all of our listeners in Baltimore at the risk of alienating them. I'm not impressed by the Ravens. I don't like their philosophy as a team, and I've never liked it. Can a team like even not in its current configuration, and I want your opinion on this. Can a team have a personality over its history?
Ooh, that's interesting. Let's think of an example of that personality. I mean, that's the Raiders, right?
Well, I mean, it used to be. I don't think it is anymore. Certainly not since they've moved to Las Vegas, but I feel like that that you know that they were kind of the villains of football. I don't think that's really. I think they're more irrelevant now.
I think I there's I can't explain it. There's nothing about the Ravens, even though they've won two Super Bowls in Baltimore, that just makes me want to support them.
Right.
I feel like Lamar Jackson is, while he's doing, putting up big numbers, for me, I just feel like he gets way too much credit for really having done very little so far.
I feel that way too.
In terms of advancing in the playoffs, and I'm watching and I'm waiting for this moment to for me to like really understand, because I feel it with Dak Prescott, because the one of the craziest things I heard about Dak Prescott was he's still one of the top five quarterbacks in the league. He can't win a playoff game.
Right. Right.
Well, but Lamar Jackson did, and we have no idea really how good Houston was. So I don't know what I take away from that. I think the most impressive of all the teams last weekend definitely was the Chiefs.
Yeah. I would say that as well. I would have said that Detroit was the most impressive team, but I felt like they let Tampa Bay get back into it to the point where I was a little bit nervous until, you know, obviously that last intercept that I keep wanting to say Purdy, but it's not Purdy. It's Baker Mayfield threw that last interception. And, you know, which obviously sealed the game because there was less than 2 minutes left at that point.
Yes, he actually has a really nice throws a really nice spiral.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's much more accurate than I recall. I actually would like to see him do well. I think that Cleveland jettisoned him a little bit too quickly.
Agreed.
He does tend to get, and you go back to the Rose Bowl against Georgia in 2018, he tends to get cocky very quickly. And I think that distracts him. But I'm glad he's doing well. But I think that game, I think all these games, except for Kansas City Buffalo, I won't say that one because that lived up to the hype. But the other three games, I wasn't sure what I was watching in terms of like, are both these teams really any good? Am I watching two game teams or two teams that are just okay and they're just evenly matched? So I didn't take away from the San Francisco game that they were that much better than Green Bay.
Agreed, and with Green Bay having a 9-8 record going in, and going into the hostile environment in San Francisco, and to really only lose that game on the last drive.
Well, and same thing with Tampa Bay, right? They're 9-8 going in the hostile environment in Detroit,
right?
And so really, how good is Detroit? I mean, I certainly don't feel like San Francisco is unbeatable by any means. Brock Purdy didn't look great.
Right, and hasn't looked great in his in his playoff history. I think I've made it very clear that I'm my allegiance is now with Detroit, and so I'm sticking with that. I want Detroit to win, not just this game, but the next one as well. Honestly, you know, I look at this matchup and I think, I don't know. I don't really know. I don't really know. You know, I think back, Steve, I guess probably in my most recent memory, when I think of dominance in the NFL, and maybe I need you to jar my memory that I'm forgetting something, but when I think about like the Cowboys of the 90s, you just went into playoff games assuming that they were going to win because they were just that good.
And I think that's the Patriots.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, certainly. You know, cause even when they were playing Jacksonville, and I think it was the 2018 playoffs, 17 season where Jacksonville's beating them in New England by like 10 points in the fourth quarter. You just know the Patriots are going to come back and win that game.
Right.
But we even know with KC, who I think obviously Patrick Mahomes is great. But he's lost AFC Championship games before. And he's lost the Super Bowl not too long ago, too. So it's not like you know that. Yeah, I mean, I think he's great. And let's talk about the KC Buffalo game. Because I think we can get a little bit more specifics there in some plays. I definitely thought Buffalo had it. I mean, that fake punt was terrible. I think it was the beginning of the fourth quarter. Then unbelievably, you know, the Chiefs fumble the ball in the end zone right there at the one. Buffalo gets it back. But man, Josh Allen on that one, he had that guy wide open in the end zone, that final drive.
Yeah.
And just literally the ball was short.
Yeah, which
But
was
they were also
unusual.
right. And Buffalo dropped on those two long passes he threw. Those are definitely drops.
Yes.
He put the ball in the right place in those two long ones. But I feel like Buffalo, man, they didn't have to win. But a lot of people said if Buffalo didn't tie that game with a field goal, Kansas City would have broken their heart anyway. I don't know if that would have been the case or not. But I feel like of all the teams left, Kansas City seems the strongest to me. And when they seem to get hot, they stay hot. And I don't know what Lamar Jackson's going to do. I don't have any, and maybe he'll prove me. To me, he has to have this moment where he does win this game. Just for me personally, as a fan, to really believe that there's how great he is. Because I just see a guy who's not gotten past the second round, and I'm kind of waiting. I mean, you can put up all these big numbers, don't impress me unless you're winning in big moments.
Well, I mean, I would compare that to Clayton Kershaw's career with the Dodgers, with the exception of the COVID 2020 season. Yes, I mean he's phenomenal during the regular season. Probably if not the best, at least one of the best of the pitchers over the last, decade and a half. But his playoff record is abysmal.
Well, I get a lot of flack for this. One of the people that I who put up a threw for a million miles is Dan Marino. But outside of Super Bowl 19, what did he do in the playoffs
Nothing.
to prove that he's the,
Well, and they
I
lost
can't.
that Super Bowl, didn't they?
Right. And so I don't think you can argue that Dan Marino is one of the, okay, he's one of the best quarterbacks of all time. I won't argue that. I'm not stupid. He's obviously got an arm, but he was never leading his team to championships. And I think the last time he was in an AFC championship game, they lost to who was they lost to? Was it no? It was they were in a divisional round against Jacksonville, and they lost like 60-7, which was like Jimmy Johnson's last game in the late '90s. So I guess we got kind of off track, but I just need to see something from Lamar Jackson personally.
I don't think we can ever get off track talking about Dan Marino. Mean, I feel like
We
that's a,
won't get me started on Brett Favre. I try to figure out too what I mean, and Travis Kelce is one of those guys more that I see it. I'm actually not a huge Travis Kelce fan, but we'll save that for another day. But man, the guy seems to always somehow be open. He's like the biggest guy in the field, and the Bills left him wide open several times, and I don't know how he does it. He's doing
How he
something.
manages that separation. Yeah.
Yeah,
It's
somehow he's doing it right.
yeah. I agree. I agree.
But I
So
also don't think Josh Allen, I don't think he's anything to be ashamed of in his performance. I think the Bills will get over the hump. John Elway lost three Super Bowls before he won two. And
Yeah, he did.
it's not like Josh Allen is 35 years old. They're like, oh, the window's closing. He's like, what is he, 25?
20, yeah, 26, somewhere in that neighborhood.
It's just,
No,
yeah.
as I mean, I think that nowadays they more use that phrase, can you keep the core together in order to win the championship? I don't think that's necessarily a question of whether or not Josh Allen has, five, six, seven more years of good prime quarterbacking left in him, but more can Buffalo keep the pieces around him that would be necessary to win the championship? And I also feel like part of me feels like that Buffalo as a team has some psychological stuff to get over. Just it's clear that people can come into their house and beat them,
Yeah. Well, and the Chiefs had to overcome that because remember they were huge as a franchise, really up until Andy Reid came in. They couldn't win at home. Them the Chargers also had that problem too.
Well,
And the Vikings.
I'll be interested to see what kind of problems the Chargers have next year with their recent decision. I feel
So remind our listeners that Scott is not a Harbaugh fan.
that is correct. That is correct. So I feel like he's going to bring more circus into that scenario. And I do feel like he, I was watching a couple of the guys on ESPN today, like Stephen A, and their reactions and talking about how great of a decision that it is for them to bring him in. And I'm thinking he's jumping ship. He's getting out while the getting's good, and the getting might not be good enough yet. You know, that there might still be some ramifications for the things that went on at Michigan. So I don't know. And that's just me. That's just me speculating, but I just feel like that's not over yet, and that's going to become a distraction, not only to Sandy, I just called him San Diego because that's who they are, Steve.
They are the chart. Yep.
That's going to be a distraction to the San Diego Chargers, and possibly to the NFL as well.
Are you still calling
So,
them the Cleveland Rams as well?
I mean,
And
only if they're playing the Boston Braves.
are you wearing your Jim Thorpe jersey right now?
Yes.
So I think it's safe to say that our Super Bowl prediction is Detroit versus Kansas City.
I think that yes. I think now. So let me ask you this: Are we just predicting the conference championship winners? We're not predicting a Super Bowl winner at this point,
Right,
right?
we're just predicting. I'm
Okay.
going to go on record for I'm going to go for Detroit because I just feel like there's an upset there. There's sometimes you can just feel like, like you said with those Dallas teams. I know exactly what you're talking about. You knew someone playing Dallas, there wasn't going to be that upset. You couldn't even imagine it because it wasn't going to happen because they had too much. San Francisco doesn't have too much, and Debo Samuel doesn't stay on the field. So I'm going Detroit, and I'm also going to go KC because I don't see enough from Baltimore.
And I think that's the thing. I think if Baltimore plays Houston next year, that Houston wins the game because they've got the experience at that point.
Yeah, I can see
I
that.
think it was just inexperience that with CJ that probably was got the better of them there at the end. Because who did they blistered the Browns in the first round. I mean, I love Flacco. I love what he was trying to do. But ultimately, I think that Cleveland benefited from some weakness in the AFC as a whole to get that good of a record. I don't. I think the Browns have some pieces in place, and I hope they do well. That's another tortured franchise like the Lions. But anyway, I'm shifting too far away. But I think that the Chiefs have enough experience where they're not going to be intimidated by any style that the Ravens come out there with. And you're right. I feel the same way about Lamar Jackson. I'm not so see, well, I was looking at, I don't know if you saw today, they released the MVP, nominees,
Who
I
are
guess
they?
the,
I saw the headline, but I didn't.
So it's the top three, and I don't think I can remember all five of them, but the top three were Jackson, Lamar Jackson, Christian McCaffrey, and Dak Prescott. And when you throw their numbers up there, which I want to say I got nothing against Christian McCaffrey. I think he's as far as running backs go, he's fine. But he led the league in rushing with 1,400 yards. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, what would Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith say about this? 1,400 yards is leading the league in rushing. He is turning away from the run. But it's still I just found that a little bit weak. And they threw up passing yards for Dak and for Jackson and touchdowns and all that. And yes, the numbers on the page are excellent. They're phenomenal. I mean, it's a great season for both of those quarterbacks. But again, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, what is it that constitutes a most valuable player? And is it the statistics? And it feels kind of like that's all that it is now,
Yeah, and I can't. I can, this is why I'm not on board with Dak Prescott because if you look at the Cowboys' losses, that's what I would ask you to look at. If you look at all his yardage, look at the losses they had, and they almost lost to Detroit. I think they had the same record as the Eagles. Maybe they ended up one game better.
Yeah, they did. One game better.
And have the Eagles not gone like 1-6 or 1-5?
1-6. Yep.
The Cowboys would have blown that division.
Right.
It wasn't like they were terrible. We saw what happened to them at home. So I have a hard time. He seems always so interceptions too at just the worst possible time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can't. I don't think he's their MVP. I guess I would give it to Lamar Jackson, that group. I don't know enough about. I know McCaffrey's really good, but I haven't seen enough Niners games.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to see if I could find out really quickly who the other two nominees were.
Mahomes, Allen.
Let's see. It was
Jeff Monahan.
Allen and Purdy.
Purdy for MVP?
Yep. I mean, those are the five finalists. I mean, I don't think Purdy has a shot. I'd love to see it go to Josh Allen because of the way that they kind of turned around their season and won the division.
I think since the Philadelphia loss, so since the Eagles beat the Bills, it was something like the Eagles were 1-6 and the Bills were 6-1.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, he did great. That's what I look for when I think about that award. Like, I look at that chunk right there, as opposed to Dallas really stumbled and they almost lucked into the Eagles collapse.
Right. Yeah, they did. They really did. And I guess Stephen, when I think of an MVP, and I know that you and I are older now, and sometimes the grass is greener for the younger years. But I think of Joe Montana. That's what I think of when I think of an MVP. Joe Montana may not have often led the league in passing or touchdowns or whatever, but what did he do when it was clutch time, whatever? Joe Montana wasn't going to choke. And you could say the same for Tom Brady too.
And without that hit by the Giants in the playoffs, the Niners win 5 Super Bowls.
Yes.
That was just a really unfortunate hit that ended his time in San Francisco. Yes. Yeah, Montana was just it was so quick in his release.
Yeah.
And the way he could scan the field and read his receivers.
And just the way they talk about him, you know, the guys that were in the huddle with him talk about him and how relaxed he was at all times, even when they were I know they played the Bengals twice. And I can't remember. One of them was not a very close game, and the other one was where they had to come back in the fourth quarter to win it.
Super Bowl 23 was the comeback.
Okay.
And then Super Bowl 16, that's the one where they were up like 21-0 or 21-3 at halftime. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the final score of that game, it was only like a 6-point difference.
Yeah. 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 So
shout out to Ken Anderson.
Yes. Always a shout out to Kenny Anderson.
What do you think of Ken Anderson besides the mustache? What do you think of when you picture him?
I mean, that was it. You took the mustache away from me. What else do you want me to think of?
I always liked that he had that face mask that was chipped paint.
Yeah.
So it was supposed to be black, but you could see the gray underneath it.
Well, and I also seem – and this may be just my memory going bad. Seeing him scramble always looked like it was very awkward. Like he was not natural to a good, oh, I got to break out of the pocket here. But I mean, the stash, come on. It was fantastic.
I couldn't name where he went to college. I have no idea.
No, I have no idea either. I have no idea either. But you know, that's probably I think he was roommates with Mike Schmidt.
And Jim Thorpe.
Yes. Yes.
Two shout-outs to Jim Thorpe. We're going to do a whole episode just on Jim Thorpe.
Ken Anderson went to, I don't even know how to say this, Augustana College.
That's right. I knew it was something like obscure. Is it like in Ohio or where is that?
Illinois. Rock Island, Illinois. Okay. Its campus is adjacent to the Mississippi River and covers 115 acres of hilly wooded land.
Do you remember? Now, you know I'm a
by the way, I'm getting a Nexus is getting a check from the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, the Rock Island, Illinois Chamber of Commerce for
I think
that
it's safe to say
plug.
that the Augustana rate of people applying is going to go up significantly after this
Oh,
podcast.
without question, without question. They are going to really do well. So,
Do you remember where Dave Craig went to college? And I'm going to use this to segue into our next topic in just a second.
Dave Craig, did he go to Clemson?
No. So I remember this because of the way that Dick Enberg used to always say, Dave Craig went to tiny Milton College in Wisconsin, which actually doesn't even exist anymore.
Wow.
And it didn't even exist during his playing time. So he was still playing in the NFL, and the college he went to didn't exist. It had shut down because it was so small. But anyway,
Well,
so let's say officially our picks for the Super Bowl. What Super Bowl are we on? I don't even know anymore.
I don't either.
50 something.
50, yeah, 57, 58, something like that.
So we're going with officially the Nexus is putting this down for all you bettors out there, Detroit and Kansas City.
I'll stick with you on that.
All right, which segues me into my next question for you. Now we're getting to the uncharted waters of the Nexus.
Yes. Oh, and I'm the anticipation is I mean, I can barely contain myself.
So first, tell me about your favorite NFL announcers, color analysts, sticking to only NFL. And people that we've actually listened games to. Current favorites, past favorites.
Well, my current favorite color man is Chris Collinsworth.
Yeah, I like Chris Collinsworth too.
And I actually feel like he's the standard, personally. I think that, I mean, you can't have grown up in the age that we live in and not give, even though you people have strong opinions on him, you got to give a nod to Madden. You have to. I mean, him drawing all over the screen, it's priceless. It's iconic. I don't know. But Collinsworth is my standard now. So when
I like
which
Collinsworth. I really don't like Mike Tirico, though. Mike Tirico, for 2 decades, has done nothing for me
Yeah.
as either a sports center anchor or a play-by-play guy. I don't understand what's special about him to get that job. I don't find his voice particularly great.
Yeah.
I don't want to. I don't get excited by anything he does.
Right. I don't particularly, and I think you agree. I feel like we've had this conversation before, but I'm not a big Joe Buck fan.
Yeah, neither of us are Joe Buck fans.
But I do like Troy Aikman.
Troy Aikman offers good insight, and he
Yeah.
does better than Romo comes up
Oh, yeah.
silent at times, and just
Oh.
like where there should be more, there's less.
Yes.
An example of that was there, and I heard this on another podcast on the press box, which is a good one. Shout out to the press box. They played a clip during the. They're talking about Martin Luther King, the holiday coming up. Or maybe the game was on that day. And Jim Nantz kind of led him into it. And he goes, yep, that's a good reason to have a holiday for somebody. And that was it. That was his insight, Martin Luther King Day. So I think he does give insight into plays, but he's just, to me, very inconsistent, where Troy Aikman is very consistent. And Troy Aikman, like somebody like Troy Aikman, that's got 3 Super Bowl wins. I actually think Troy Aikman's pretty underrated as a quarterback,
Yeah, I agree.
and I'm definitely not a Cowboys fan.
Right, and I agree with that too. Yeah.
So, what are your thoughts on a guy who's rising up in the ranks as Ian Eagle? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
He's got a pretty good voice. He's really, I think he's number 2 at CBS right now, but I think he's going to become the voice for the tournament. And replace Jim Nantz when that takes place. But Ian Eagle is pretty good. For me, when I think from best announcers for me in my lifetime, before talking about NFL, the one that always got me excited was Dick Enberg. And when you had him and Merlin Olsen together, I just felt that was there a certain excitement to way that, his oh my, and just the way he called the game. He always seemed excited, whereas I like Pat Summerall and John Madden, and they were a great team. But while their chemistry was great, I never felt excitement from them, for me.
Well, I mean, Pat Summerall didn't really exude enthusiasm. He was really kind of, I don't want to say deadpanned, but he was, he was sort of, I guess, even keel to Madden's almost hyperactivity.
Yeah.
And
that's the thing, though. Madden, to me, wasn't like, I need the excitement of the flow of the game, not the excitement of, look at this offensive lineman blocking this guy. Like, that's not what I'm looking for.
Someone, what about Keith Jackson?
So when I think of Keith Jackson, I think of baseball and I think of college football.
Yeah.
But I don't really have any NFL memories of him in particular.
Okay. But you do have some college football memories.
I have lots of Keith Jackson. Right? Yeah. He was a great announcer.
I mean, that's the kind of enthusiasm I like to hear.
Granddaddy of them all.
Yeah. Whoa, Nelly.
Whoa, Nelly.
Yeah. That's a good, but as far as today active, I mean, I feel like I like Aikman a lot, but for me, Collinsworth is the standard. I like it. Excites me a little bit more to be watching a game when he's calling it.
Yeah, I agree too. Because I get his. I feel like he's excited, not in the same way that Enberg to me was just
right.
Enberg and Merlin Olsen had a great back and forth. I think that Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth had that. I miss having them together.
Yeah.
I thought they were, because Al Michael always had that excitement for me.
Yeah. But I feel like I learn things when Collinsworth is calling a game.
Yeah.
And we had this discussion when we talked about when we did the Why We Love Baseball, was that when we watch a baseball game, typically, unless it's somebody that's really bad, we learn things in watching the game. Why is it, when I'm watching a football game, the strategy is certainly there is play calling, there is strategy, there is, offensive and defensive schemes that need to be in place. This guy has to be here. This guy has to be here at this point in time. There might be motion. There might not, those sorts of things. But with baseball, and I'm not really trying to switch this over to baseball, but like, When they say, okay, right here, you need to look for the change up, or right here, you're gonna need he's probably about to give him the breaking ball. I'm thinking to myself, I want to know why. What is it? Why at this point, this juncture? Okay, there's a runner on second. There's a runner on third. There's a runner taking a big lead from first. The outfield's playing shallow. The outfield's playing deep. Those sorts of things, and of course we don't have to deal with the shift anymore, but I feel like I learned something with almost every play call on a baseball game. With football, I don't feel that way as much unless it's the right commentator.
Well, I feel lately on football, I'm getting too much of a description that's going on.
Right.
And just a lot of cliche with it.
Right.
Oh, the key right now is first downs, Scott.
Yes. Like they used to do.
If they don't stop him here, that's the game.
When Frank Caliendo used to do John Madden, and he would say things like, "What's going to happen here is whoever scores the most points is going to win the football game."
And then they go, "Boom! Tough acting's enacted."
And sometimes I do feel like commentators that aren't Madden are doing those sorts of things. But with Collinsworth, I feel like it's almost like watching a baseball game. Is that he's going to tell me, okay, why it is that an out route is going to be better in this situation than a slant route. Those sorts of things. I'm very impressed by, his explanations. And I feel like Aikman gives a lot of the same kind of stuff. I think that as time goes on and he gets the years that Collinsworth has had, that he will continue to grow and be just as good.
What do you think about Dan Dierdorf when he was on Monday Night Football?
I didn't have a problem with Dan Dierdorf. I think he was decent.
I think he was decent. My only complaint about Dierdorf, and I like him rather than not. And when I think back on, I actually like hearing his voice because it's a, you know, kind of from our childhood in the younger years. But my complaint about Dierdorf was that he would always use this phrase. And he would just, it's almost what Gary Danielson does in the SEC games. You know, if Randall Cunningham is not the best quarterback in the league today, then who is? And he was just like, anytime someone made a good play, that's what he would say.
Yeah.
And that was kind of his MO. And people would argue that he was mad and light, but overall I liked Dierdorf.
All right, go ahead. What about the air with like Brent Musburger and Dan Fouts?
That's college football, isn't it?
Didn't they call pro games too?
Dan Fouts actually was on Monday Night Football with Dennis Miller, right?
Was it? Yeah. Okay. So what about Dennis Miller?
That didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't.
I like the idea of spicing it up, and I think that they've made some bad calls with Monday Night Football.
In the attempt to do so, yeah.
But I mean, Aikman and Buck are fine. Like we said, we've set our piece on Joe Buck.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So here we're going to shift gears now. We're going to go into. I do want to talk about this. And I don't know if you've seen this. I was on Disney Plus, which I don't think you have.
I do have Disney Plus.
Okay.
Yeah.
So have you ever watched the deleted scenes for Return of the Jedi?
No.
So I came across one that I had never seen, that I thought would be a good quick discussion for us to have.
Okay.
So basically, it's this: while you've got the Battle of Endor going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the rebels attacking Death Star 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke and the Emperor having all their thing going. There's mm-hmm. a fourth thing going on. And that's a very... So if you remember back to the beginning of the movie, it starts with Vader getting off the Imperial shuttle. He's walking mm-hmm. down. And he says, "You can dispense with your pleasantries, Commander. The Emperor isn't mm-hmm. displeased with your progress." So he's talking to that admiral or general, whatever his name is. Mm-hmm. So later in the movie... that guy's in the movie again, and what's happening is he's told to, if things aren't going well, if the rebels capture the shield generator, if they get that down, go ahead and blow up the planet. And I think he was talking to the Emperor, and his response was, "But I've got a whole unit, you know, I've got men down there."
Uh-huh.
They said, "Are you questioning orders? Do it." And so there's a couple scenes where he's in, you know, the control room where the big laser thing is the Death Star.
Yeah, that scene that they recycle. Yeah.
Yes. And he's very conflicted about doing it. And you can see, like, you know, he's worried about it and the angst in his face. And then ultimately there's a part where he does actually say he realizes that the rebels gain control of that bunker and he says, "Blow it up."
Wow.
And that scene's cut. So what do you think of that type of scene? And with three things already going on simultaneously, that would be a fourth thing. Could they mm-hmm. edited that in? What do you think? To steal a phrase from our friend Conrad over on What Happened When in Wrestling, what say you?
So, all right, first of all, I have to take into account that in that era, when Return of the Jedi came out, there were movies had basically there was a time frame that I feel like that they had to stay within in most cases.
2 hours, you know, at that point in time, I think
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 2 hours, and I feel like at that point, 2 hours was a longer movie.
Yeah, well, there's the bigger movies like a blockbuster.
Yeah,
were 2 hours, and then like a comedy would be between like 87 to, you know, 92 minutes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that adding in another subplot might be stretching the bounds of that. I guess it would have been an unwritten rule at the time. So that's my first thought. I think to add that in seems a little bit, and I will tell you, I will freely tell you, I have not much into, I know that there are people who like to take even movies like Star Wars from the 80s and try to apply, lay them over pop culture and historical events at the time. Okay, is the Empire, is that a representation of the Soviet Union? You know, that sort of thing. That, having that in there with this, okay, do we, almost like a Harry Truman kind of language, do I drop the bomb, do I not drop the bomb?
Right.
Kind of thing going on.
Very much was kind of like that.
It feels a little bit, that feels a little bit hyper political to me. Now I haven't seen it like you have, so I don't know what kind of emotions that would evoke. I think if you were to put that in there now and say they release a new extended version of Return of the Jedi on a new set of, well, they don't do Blu-rays anymore, but just say that they decided to incorporate that into the screenplay. I don't think it would matter as much to, you know, yours and my children or children who are even younger who might be watching those, because they didn't grow up in the Cold War. And so there's not this kind of, you know, this angst over, you know.
Well, think about the tension this adds to this movie, though. If he blows up the planet, that's all the Ewoks. That's Han Solo. That's Princess Leia.
Yeah. Yeah. And agreed that there's some tension there. Again, you know, I didn't see it, so I don't have a good frame of reference.
Take a look at it and let me know what you think.
It
would be interesting if there was technology that existed where you could, like, you know, just check off a deleted scene.
Yeah.
And it would be like inserted into the movie.
Yes. Yes.
And watch it through like that, because I'm curious. My gut on this scene tells me that, well, I like the added tension, and you could feel it, that the problem would be that cutting between four different plots would have been too much.
Yeah. I mean, because it was a busy movie as it was.
Right. It was a bit, exactly. And so I think they were right to cut that scene, but it certainly gives you something to think about. So I definitely recommend watching that.
Now, let me ask you this. Who is this admiral or whatever rank he was, who is he interacting with that's telling him, you do your job? Is it the emperor directly? Is it Vader?
I think it's the emperor, but you're not hearing the emperor's voice.
Okay.
It's just, I think it's someone just reading the role of the emperor.
Okay.
And it's weirdly cut with what you see with the throne room scene with Vader and Luke, too.
Okay.
It's not, I would love to see it seamlessly in there, but anyway, so
well,
let's.
I do feel like, though, that, you know, this is an opportunity for us to, you know, say to one of our sponsors on the air, like maybe our good friends at the internet, that this is something that they could pull off. You know, this inserting of the scenes into the film.
I feel like the internet could really step up.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. So we're challenging one of our sponsors to do the right thing. And make this,
because Lord knows Fancy Feast will not do the right thing.
That's true. That is true. Anyway, all right. So what else you got?
So talking about, I listened to Spicks and Specs by the Bee Gees. And I definitely was not surprised to see that was a song that was released in 1966. Mm-hmm. But it almost sounded to me like the Turtles, that kind of sound. I don't know how to explain what a 60s sound sounds like. Very upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Very not disco at all.
Right.
I think it's kind of nice to hear that from the Bee Gees. So I like the song. I haven't listened to it a ton of times or anything like that, but I think that they definitely sounded of the 1960s as much as their 70s stuff sounded like the 70s.
Right. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I wanted you to take a listen to it, because I knew that that would be something that you would appreciate. So,
But
did you listen to the live version or the
I
recorded, the
listened to the
studio?
recorded version studio.
So, I would suggest, if you can find it, say I have Amazon Music, so I don't know if it's going to be on
Spotify.
Spotify, but I would assume it probably is. There is a live version that I feel like. Every now and then you find some songs that are better live than they are on the studio recording. And I feel like this is one of them. So I would encourage you to check that out. Let me see if I can find which album it is on. It is on the Ultimate Bee Gees.
Okay.
The live version is on the Ultimate Bee Gees. I don't know if you.
Are they
So, if
older
you
when they're
want,
singing this, or is this a
I mean, it doesn't sound like it. There's a lot of similarities between. I think it's like, they're singing it on the tour when that song was released, would be my guess. I didn't delve into when the recording was for the live. I probably could do that. I didn't. So, but it doesn't sound like, hey, this is 20 years later and we're performing this song.
right. And I think they didn't really get into the falsetto thing until really into the 70s,
Yeah.
in the early 70s. So I wasn't, from thinking back to me listening to the song, I don't recall hearing that. But it's interesting that, like, they're replicating a song a sound in the 60s, where in the 70s they were the sound.
Right.
And then everything was copied from that point.
Right.
And like Barry Gibb said, what did we do wrong to be so hated? We just made music everybody loved. And he's
Right.
absolutely right.
Yep.
The Bee Gees are a treasure that we should all love.
Yeah.
He would be, if we could have guests onto the Nexus, Barry Gibb would be up there on my list. I would, and I, Hulk Hogan would be another one. I had another good one just a second ago. Oh, Christopher Lloyd,
Oh, yeah.
I think would be someone I would also love to have on. The Nexus. But I think Barry Gibb, he just seems like such a nice guy and would have so many great stories. All right, so here's my last question for you, out of the blue questions that you're not prepared for. So let's get your thoughts on Peter Frampton.
Frampton comes alive. So just in general,
Do you enjoy his music? Do you like the sound? He has a very distinctive sound.
Well, I mean, isn't he kind of the one who invented the thing that what's his name used not long ago? T-Pain did not. T I mean, I guess that's probably been about 10 or 15 years ago
Oh,
now. But
the vocal thing, the
yeah, that yeah. I mean,
auto
that's
tune.
what is it? Do you feel? Do you feel like we do? That comes to mind first when I think of Peter Frampton. I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other about Peter Frampton. I don't think that he is not one who, like, to quote the guy from who played Dr. Cox in Scrubs, but in Office Space said about what was
Michael
his
Bolton?
Michael Bolton, I celebrate
I
his
celebrate
entire
his entire
collection.
catalog. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's a
yeah.
great line.
I don't feel that way about Peter Frampton. If you were to pick me up for our upcoming road trip and say, we're gonna listen to Frampton Comes Alive for the next little while, I wouldn't have a problem with that. So I don't no no strong feelings. What brought Peter Frampton into the Nexus tonight?
I just always during our conversations, there's someone like that. There's an artist that usually sets you off that you're really passionate about that I say I don't like. I'm not a big Frampton fan myself. Don't hate him, but I don't know. Just whenever I hear him come on, there's nothing that makes me want to leave it on.
So you were trying to bait me, in other words.
Kind of, yeah. I was kind of
Okay.
hoping you'd be really passionate about Peter Frampton, but okay. So
Okay.
here's final. We're getting down to the 50th minute, so getting down to our final thoughts. And here's a just one I'm going to throw out before we go. Going back to Lamar Jackson, is Lamar Jackson the Aaron Judge of the NFL right now? And what I mean by that is really big numbers. Not been to a championship series yet. Like I just read a headline that said, this top superstars for MLB, and it has Aaron Judge as number one on that list, and I wouldn't put him as number one.
I wouldn't either. As and I say that as a Yankees fan. First of all, so I'm reading right now. Have you ever heard it's a classic book, so I'm curious if you ever heard of it or better yet read it. The Boys of Summer by Roger Kahn.
Yes, I don't. I think I read the book, and also there was a documentary that you could rent. But yeah, I remember Carl Erskine was in that, who's the pitcher for the.
So I'm reading this, and it's talking about ball players and the things that they went through, and just, and of course the premise of the book is that, Roger Kahn, he sets up the first half of the book just talking about growing up near Ebbets Field and watching, the late 40s and early 50s Dodgers play, and then being their beat writer for not the Daily News, not the New York Times. It's one of the ones that's no longer there. I can't remember. Maybe I was about to say the Daily Planet, but whatever paper it was, and being the beat writer for them, for the Dodgers, and getting to know these guys. And then, so after setting up, kind of the highs and lows of both his life and the Dodgers in that period, then he. The book shifts, and in the last half, he's going to them, 15, 20 years after the 55 championship, in the early, late 60s, early 70s, so probably about 15 years, and going to see them like members of the team where they live at this point in time, and them talking about and interviewing these guys and talking about baseball and what it meant to them and just feeling the love of the game in them. And it's just not something I feel in baseball today. You talk about Aaron Judge, and obviously my beef with Aaron Judge, and of course it's going to be more profound or pronounced, not profound, but more pronounced with other players. But, Judge can't stay on the field. He can't not be hurt. And some of these hurts, these ailments that I feel like so many of these players will sit out a game for, I just. Most men that I know would just short of sell their souls to be able to play a sport for a living and to get paid for it, But the reality is that 99 point whatever 6% of us aren't talented enough to do that, And if I was playing baseball, if I had the God-given talent to be able to take the field for 162 games every year, whether I be a pitcher or a shortstop or an outfielder, whatever, and I could swing the bat and make contact with a 95 mile an hour fastball, get on base, run the bases, I would do everything within my power to be on the field every day.
Like Samad
Everything.
Taylor.
Right. That's the kind of heart I'm talking about. Samad Taylor heart. That's what I'm looking for. And I just I, too much now, I'm looking, and is Shohei Ohtani great? Yes. He is phenomenal. He is a great ball player. But I feel like we're talking more. I get on, ESPN or whatever, and I'm reading these articles or I'm listening to these commentators, and we're talking so much more about deferred contract money than we are about, okay, how are the Dodgers going to look next year?
Yeah, I hate when we're talking about contracts. But and just speaking of, I love there's something they do on Comrade Thompson always does this to prove that someone is not nearly as great as they were. He say, quick, give me your top five moments. Todd Helton just got elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Quick, give me your top five Todd Helton moments.
I can't give you one.
I can't give you one either. But I
Right.
think that's kind of a metric for me. We can talk about the Hall of Fame another episode.
Yes.
But like, if I can't name you these great moments, were they that great?
Now, so I'm legitimately excited about Adrian Beltre. I think he absolutely is a Hall of Fame player.
I feel like Andrew Jones is, and he didn't get elected.
Yeah, I do too. I think he will, though. I think he will. I think it's heading in that direction for Andrew Jones. Hey, is Chipper already in?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, he's well past 5 years. So
okay, I wasn't. I assumed that was the case, but I couldn't remember that. So anyway, yeah. So no, I do not feel like I guess the original question was, do I feel like Aaron Judge is the best player in baseball? No, I do not. Do I think he's the best player on the Yankees? Probably.
Well, the question was this: Is Lamar Jackson the Aaron Judge of the NFL?
Oh yes. Okay.
Putting up big numbers generates lots of excitement, but is he really advancing his team?
Gosh. I would think that Lamar Jackson has to put up big numbers for another couple of years before I'm willing to say big numbers and go nowhere for me to say that he's the Aaron Judge. Okay, all of my fellow Yankees fans that are listening to this, I apologize for what I'm about to say. But I think it's a disservice to Lamar Jackson at this point to call him that.
I love that.
So, and I mean that, man. So I really do. Apart from Gerrit Cole, I don't feel like the Yankees in their current configuration have anybody that's just got a ton of heart and competitive fire. And that's been what's killing them over the years.
The Yankees are in the headlines because they're the Yankees.
Yes, absolutely.
Any other team that's been doing what they're doing, it would be just the Milwaukee Brewers.
But when I think of Paul O'Neill, when I think of Derek Jeter, when I think of Thurman Munson, when I think of I know that Thurman Munson is reaching back to when you and I were just barely walking.
Yeah.
But when I think about people that, you know, I mean, say what you will about Roger Clemens, but he had a competitive spirit. You know, I look at some of the guys that are playing now, and I feel like somehow every year the Tampa Bay Rays bring that competitive spirit to the field,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it is priceless. Is the Yankees need to forget about the fact that they're the Yankees and remember that they still have to work hard to win ball games. They're not just going to win them. The Yankee mystique is gone. You know, people aren't going to lay down like you're the Yankees of the 1960s or the Cowboys of the 1990s, the Patriots of the 2000s, just because you're the Yankees. Nobody's going to lay down. Nobody lays down for the Patriots anymore. And it's only been 10 years since they were dominant. You know, so I'm sorry to say it to my fellow Yankees fans, but I think it's a disservice to Lamar Jackson at this stage to call him the Aaron Judge of pro football. If he goes another 2-3 years and he's putting up gaudy numbers during the regular season and they're not winning Super Bowls, then yeah. And also, to be fair, I mean, Lamar Jackson is in a position to go to the Super Bowl still. He's still in the playoffs. And, you know, right. maybe they come out and they just bash in the Chiefs and then they bash in the NFC champion.
Yeah, and if he does all that, I mean, and I think getting to a Super Bowl really puts you on a different level too.
Yeah, agreed. Except as we've already established, unless you're Dan Marino. Just kidding, Dan. We love you.
Please, no phone calls or text messages about Dan Marino.
Right, yes. Yes.
All right. Well, that's going to, if you have Mike Schmidt trivia for me, that's going to wrap us up for this evening.
Yes. Tonight's Mike Schmidt trivia question is brought to us by the Augustana College Vikings.
Go Vikings.
And so the question here, Steve, We know that Mike Schmidt made his debut with the Philadelphia Phillies in 1972. We know that it was in September of 1972 that he received the call-up. Okay? So my question, the trivia question tonight that our friends at Augustana want you to answer is, within how many days of Scott Whaley's birthday was his call-up?
I would say four.
Oh, that's a good guess. So I will give you, so standard deviation being what it is, it was actually 3 days. He was called up on September the 12th.
It depends what, you know, what time zones we're talking about here. And I think Greenwich time and the prime meridian plays a role here.
Yeah, well, it does. It does. So we'll just say that 4 days was almost was reasonably correct. So excellent job. Mike, Donna, we love you. We look forward to
look forward to seeing you in June when we're up there for a Phillies game. I'm still here. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
What were you saying? We look forward to what now?
To meeting them when we're up there for a game this summer.
Yes, I'm assuming we'll get an invite to the house for like a barbecue or something.
I would be insulted. I think it would be a snub.
I think that's reasonable to say. So, awesome. Well,
I hope you enjoyed it. To our listeners, our new format of just throwing random topics at Scott.
Right. I love this. I feel like this was an excellent production. So look forward to seeing those comments roll in about how impressed people were with our various takes on just we've clearly shown that there is no topic too small for us.
That is true.
So anyway, well, my friend, I guess it's time to exit the Nexus.
Yes, we will see you next week to discuss the conference championship games and our predictions for Super Bowl 50-something.
And it's so awesome when you say things like, we'll see you next week.
We'll be back.
Here's our optimism, folks. We'll be back next week with our Super Bowl picks.
And that will be on March 7th.
Yes. All right, my friend.
Enjoy your week.
You do the same.
Good night.